unboundedly in his private correspondence, Jefferson acknowledges that there is, in fact, a deep and sectional basis to the partisan divisions between Federalists and Jeffersonians. And it's in this light that he counsels patience. To John Taylor, a great sectional hothead of Virginia, he writes in 1798, "It is true that we are completely under the saddle of Massachusetts and Connecticut, and that they ride us very hard. But our present situation is not a natural one. The body of our countrymen is substantially Republican through every part of the Union." And it is that unbounded confidence and optimism in Jefferson that ultimately history and the American people will vindicate him. "Seeing that we must have someone to quarrel with, I had rather keep our New England associates for that purposes than to see our bickering transferred to others. They are circumscribed within such narrow limits, and their population so full that their numbers will ever be the minority, and they are marked, like the Jews, with such a peculiarity of character as to constitute, from that circumstance, the natural division of our parties. A little patience, and we shall see the reign of witches pass over, their spells dissolve, and the people, recovering their true sight, restore the government to its true principles." Well, Jefferson's political judgment was unerring. Just as he had expected, he knew his friend Adams too well to believe that Adams would ultimately serve a Hamiltonian program. And when Adams proved unwilling to do just that, he did an act which destroyed the Federalist Party and led to deep divisions. And that act is, as the nation is whipped into this patriotic war fever to attack France, he realizes that there's a grave danger involved in this. And that danger is that if we fight France, the High Federalist will attempt to charge the Republicans with treason. And that if Southerners try to resist this program, that the Federalists will use the army to quell any sort of disruption. And in fact, Hamilton, who has maneuvered to get himself headed of the army, has mentioned that this is in fact something that could happen. It wouldn't be too bad if some, you know, Virginians decided they wanted to try to secede. We could settle this problem once and for all. Adams realizes that this is a crisis for the nation, and he does, in exact opposition to every member of his cabinet, an extremely courageous act. He sends a fresh diplomatic envoy to France and negotiates a peace. In doing this, he removes the greatest partisan claim that his Federalists had in the election of 1800 and creates a deep split within the Federalist Party. And in fact, it's at this point that Hamilton becomes somewhat unhinged. Without Washington to guide him, his brilliant but mercurial mind begins to take on an almost deranged aspect. He strikes out at Adams. He writes to Theodore Sedgwick, "If we must have an enemy at the head of the government, let it be one whom we can oppose and for whom we are not responsible, who will not involve our party in the disgrace of his foolish and bad measures. Under Adams, as under Jefferson, the government will sink. The party in the hands of whose chief it shall sink will sink with it, and the advantages will all be on the side of his adversaries." Well, Hamilton can't control himself, and eventually he publishes a document, a remarkable pamphlet called "A Letter from Alexander Hamilton Concerning the Public Conduct and Character of John Adams." "Not denying to Mr. Adams patriotism, integrity, and even talents of a certain kind, I should be deficient in candor were I to conceal the conviction that he does not possess the talents adapted to the administration of government, and that there are great and intrinsic defects in his character which unfit him for the office of chief magistrate. And specifically what Hamilton has in mind is his choice to make peace with France against the wishes of his cabinet." Now, ultimately, Hamilton embraces, or I should say, endorses Adams, but it's the sort of endorsement that you never want to get. "To refrain from a decided opposition to Mr. Adams' re-election has been reluctantly sanctioned by my judgment, which has been not a little perplexed between the unqualified conviction of his unfitness for the station contemplated and a sense of the great importance of cultivating harmony among the supporters of the government, on whose firm union hereafter will probably depend the preservation of order, tranquility, liberty, property, and the security of every social and domestic blessing." Well, that division in Federalist ranks resulted in the election of 1800. And Jefferson gets a clear majority of the electoral vote. But however, there's a peculiar constitutional loophole that mars the election, which is that when electors cast ballots at this time, they cast two ballots.